Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
When I was maybe 12 years old, I started experiencing what I now know was a form of obsessive compulsive disorder. When I got a pile of paper, I would only kind of pick the paper third from the top. And I started developing this habit that I called double touching, which was I had this urge to make the touches of my body equal on the left side and on the right. And other kind of panic-based fears and thoughts that were coming up for me around the safety of my family and all kind of crescendoing around early puberty for me. And I didn't really ever talk about it. I didn't get help for it, in part probably because I didn't tell my parents that that's what was going on. When I started having panic attacks when I was about 19 years old, then all of a sudden realized, like, I need help dealing with the thoughts inside my head, and went to therapy and started to uncover a little bit more about what was going on inside of me. But of course, that was the part of my life before motherhood. I then had to deal with other forms of OCD when I became a mom, and many of us experience things like intrusive thoughts. I'm worried about the baby. And so thankfully then I was again able to get more help. And what has truly helped me in understanding myself is looking at motherhood and the brain, understanding that our minds are not always here to make us happy. In fact, I think as moms, I've learned a little bit more of the neuroscience of how our brains are programmed to help keep our babies alive. And that can mean that we have anxieties and obsessive thoughts. And for me, being more aware that, oh, this is what my maternal mind wants to do, it gives me a little bit of distance and maybe some space to not always react and act on the fears and the urges. And today's guest is an inspiring mom who has also been incredibly open about her own mental health challenges and the support that she's leaned on along the way. I'm excited for today's conversation. Here it is. Hey, Mama. Welcome to the Motherly Podcast, where we have super honest conversations about modern motherhood. I am Liz Tennedy. I am a co-founder of Motherly, and I'm also a mother of five myself. Today's guest is Amanda Seyfried, best known for her work in Mean Girls, Mamma Mia, Les Miserables, and her Emmy award-winning turn as Elizabeth Holmes in The Dropout. Amanda is also the co-founder of Make It Cute, a sustainable playhouse company that she created with two of her childhood best friends. Amanda and I talk about how motherhood has reshaped us, on the importance of leaning on our support systems and managing our mental health as mothers, and also why she left the big city for a more simple, grounded life on a farm. Amanda Seyfried, welcome to the Motherly Podcast.
Thank you very much.
We're so happy to have you here. I imagine that you prepare extensively for every role that you play. Did you feel prepared for motherhood?
Yes and no. I think I knew I always wanted to be a mother, but that doesn't factor in as much as you think, or at least as much as I thought it would. Feeling primed for it, just ready to just spill all my love onto these little humans. But I also know I have a lot of anxiety. I did extensive preparation with when it came to my OCD, my obsessive compulsive disorder, and I did cognitive behavioral therapy to get ready to have my baby, but none of that really holds a candle to just the blatant, harsh thrust of like your entire being into this new realm in a matter of seconds when you hear your baby cry. And I think I'm just still learning. I have a six-year-old and a three-year-old. I'm still learning. There's so much to learn about how to raise them now and just keeping them alive and then raising them to be good people. I feel as equipped as anybody else. I didn't go to college for it, but I certainly try to be present.
When did you realize that it wasn't the kind of role that you can just prepare for? When did you realize that it was this other thing, this other transformation, other role, other way of being in the world that you'd never experienced before? Was that before or after?
That's a really good question. I think it just happened naturally when I just ceased to have any time at all. Because newbornhood is something I never want to go through again. It's like a black hole, beautiful black hole. But show me someone who doesn't feel completely lost and underwater, but so full of love. It's a very strange dichotomy and very strange world to live in, where time doesn't exist. And I think that's when I realized I might never come up for air. So I'm just going to try to figure out how to survive this way. And then as soon as you figure out a way to survive the present and what's being thrown at you, then it changes. And there's a new phase. And then you get pregnant again and it happens all over. You want to have another baby. However you have your babies, however you get pregnant or whatever your method is, it's like once they come out again and become real people with hopefully two arms and two legs, and then you're thrust back into that black hole. And again, it's just about surviving and keeping them alive and keeping your sanity. And there's some beauty in that too, of being lost, because the parameters that you set for yourself go out the window. And there's a surrendering that happens that can be freeing. And I'm sure people understand like that liberation, having your hands tied, but also being like, well, my hands are tied. So that's it. It's the reality.
How would you describe getting to the other side of that black hole? When you describe the timelessness of having a newborn, I think all of our listeners can probably relate. You don't stay there, but you don't go back to where you were. How did you reshape yourself, your career, your mental health coming out of that part of motherhood?
I think I leaned a lot on the people in my life. I happen to be lucky that my two best friends that I grew up with, that I have a business with, we had this mother chain, this text chain, because we all got pregnant with our firsts around the same time. They're all a couple months apart in age. And I think that without them, I don't know if I would have been able to transition without as much fear as I probably would have had if I hadn't had them to answer my questions in the middle of the night and to make me feel like I'm doing okay and they're doing okay. And I have my mom, and I tried to let go of the fear and just remember that in the hardest moments, I just tried to remember that it was just a phase. Feelings aren't facts. That's the thing I kept saying to myself. But yeah, it's all about having women really to fall into. God, I don't know what I would have done. There's a handful of people that I call at any hour. And my best friend actually said to me yesterday, she's, you know what I just learned?
What?
In the end, it's all going to be okay. You're actually going to be fine. And for the most part, for most of us, that's true. So you just got to trust it. I was like, oh, it's funny. I've heard it, but I've never heard it quite like that.
Like when your best friend says it.
I know. We're all talking. We got to all keep sharing our stories.
Well, that's what we're doing here on the podcast. So you mentioned your OCD diagnosis and such a powerful example in your case of actually getting help preventatively, that as you were becoming a mom, realizing this is a whole other part of navigating mental health. Can you just talk more about specifically OCD and motherhood and how, what kinds of supports, what kinds of practices have helped you on your journey?
I think talking about it has been liberating. It liberates me from that voice in my head that says, you're doing it wrong. Nothing's going to be okay. They're not safe. That kind of stuff. As I grew up, the voice was like, you're not safe. You're not safe. You need to do this and this in order to feel safe. That kind of very typical OCD behavior and the manifestations of whatever anxiety that you have that you don't really know how to battle. I didn't know I had OCD until I was 19. So,
by the way, I'm sorry to cut you off.
You're good.
I also have OCD. I also had it as a child. And similarly, like you're saying, I didn't know I had it. It just was living. I didn't even know enough to articulate it to my parents about what I was going through. It just felt life. And it wasn't until later when I had panic that we realized something was going on that I really needed help with. We're a generation of moms that are very conscious in talking about and destigmatizing mental health. It wasn't quite that way when we were growing up. People weren't equipping us as kids with ways to understand ourselves and talk about what we were going through. I had a very similar experience. Didn't know what was happening inside of me.
We didn't have the language. It's also was scary, whatever was happening to us, or the thoughts that we were having. I thought they would think I was crazy. We didn't have the language. It didn't feel safe. It is a generational thing, for sure. We have learned from that, and we can take that and hopefully give the language to our kids, and also just create so much space for them to be scared and to say things that they're scared of saying, and to say, yeah, no, that makes sense. Like, I hear you. I totally hear you, and I love you, and let's try to figure out a way to make you feel more comfortable or more and safer. And so if I'd heard that, and I'm not saying my parents weren't wonderful, I was hiding it. We were all hiding it. Our fears for one reason or another. That's what makes it worse. If you talk about it, you communicate it with somebody who loves you, cares for you, chances are you'll feel more safe in the world. And that's what I wanted to be able to give to my kids, but also live, which is why I felt like I needed to be so proactive. Before she came, my daughter was first. And it really helped. There are people equipped to help us with our fears and how they manifest and our anxieties and our panic. And it's all about talking. It's all about sharing. Again, it's just so powerful when you talk about it. Like, I know my daughter just feels so much better when I'm just like, what's going on? Is it this? Or do you know what? I felt that way too. Oh gosh, doesn't that suck? She's like, yeah, I can feel the weight come off. How beautiful is that that we can do that? I mean, we can't fix everything, but at least we can talk to our kids.
So do you feel like all that work that you did helped equip you in a way to be that voice to your daughter, the one that you needed?
It absolutely started that ball rolling, really. I've been in therapy for a long time, and I've really learned how to communicate with myself and with everybody, partners, parents, my sister, and learning how to communicate in a healthy, helpful, impactful way is a real superpower. And I really think that couples therapy, for instance, has really helped me be able to navigate the tough, tricky, sticky times with my daughter and my son. He's a 3.5-year-old, you know, that age. And
yes, I have a 4-year-old son.
Wow. I find myself begging for 4 to happen. Like, it can't come soon enough, but that's actually not the way I want to live either. I want to love every bit of him right now. And I do. But boy, oh boy, it's a tricky time for us in terms of communicating and allowing space for that age and whatever capacity he has to understand things. It's also just, yeah, 4. It must be fun. No, I'm kidding. No, it's tough at every age, for sure.
It is. It's tough at every age and it's hard at every age. My oldest is 11. So I've had enough turns of this now. That feeling of impermanence is so real to me. And we've been through hard times with my 11-year-old. And now at this moment, I'm like, what a perfect citizen. But a year or two ago, I was probably pulling my hair out. But I've lived it now long enough where what becomes, as I can tell for you, like a living meditation.
I definitely feel really lucky that I feel like my husband and I are really great parenting team, and we really lean on each other. If I don't feel like I'm emotionally ready to deal with a situation as it comes, and I'm not going to say the right thing at the right time, I tap out. And I'm like, you know what? Let's bring your dad in here. Let's just see. Let's all talk it out. And then he'll pick up the slack. And it's like, I feel incredibly lucky that I have him. And my mom. Oh my God.
You live on a farm. Side note, my husband's life dream, living on the farm, the pigs. I have books about raising goats in my house. We've never raised a goat, but I know you do.
I just got three this morning.
I saw on your Instagram. How did this part of you come to be in the world? You didn't grow up this way.
I did not. No, I grew up in a twin home that my dad lives in Pennsylvania, and very suburban, Allentown, very suburban. And I always really loved animals and horses. Never rode them as a kid. Didn't really have the means. I've always wanted land. I lived in LA in this city, and I'm like, I still want some land for myself at some point. And I don't know if you know this, but it's a lot cheaper to live outside of New York City. So I got hip to that super quick. And in 2013, I was always looking for land up in upstate New York because it seemed so exotic to me as someone from Pennsylvania, even though it's really similar landscape and not that far away from each other. And I kept looking every couple of years with my mom. This was one of them. And I thought, oh, this is great. Let's do it. And my business manager, who's been with me since I was 16, was like, okay, what, 2 hours north of the city? Have you been there before? And I'm like, this is where I'm going to die. This is it for me. This will be my home base. And I'm so happy. And yeah, we did get three goats. We got two horses last week. We got two horses in December. We've rescued two very broken mini horses last spring. It's really grown. I love it so much. I love it.
What does it mean to you? And I'm specifically asking that knowing that you live your life in the public eye. You have millions of followers, and I can't even imagine how much that to me would feel like pressure.
But that's the thing. The pressure's totally gone when I'm here. Gone. I'm as grounded in the earth, in the actual dirt, in the ground, not figuratively, but yes, that ends up happening. When you live in nature, when you live in a Mary Oliver poem, when you can smell fresh air and manure, and when you can just give something as simple as hay to an animal to keep them alive and to show that to your kids that this is the natural world. This is the way animals move, the way they think, the way that their instincts are so different than ours. It's just really beautiful. And if you can do it, then you should, I think, because it does tie you into the bigger picture so easily. And my kids love it. And my husband loves it. And my mom loves it. And it's inspired a lot of other people to move up here, friends and family. And I think it was my, so it sounds ridiculous, but I do think it was my destiny to have a farm. It is absolutely why I can be in the public eye and rush to LA to be at the Golden Globes and then come home the next day and be completely fine. I also just can't imagine living in a city and sending my kids to school in the city. People do it all. Most of my friends do it. I just can't picture it.
What do you think your kids learn and absorb from growing up in that environment? And also, how do you, in the little ways, include them in the life of the farm, in the seasons, in the cycles?
They get to name a lot of the new animals.
Oh, that's fun.
I was just telling my friend before I called in that we had these three goats that just got dropped off from Philly. And he said, what are their names? And I'm like, I didn't get their names. It was just such an emergency situation that this amazing woman who works at Goats of Anarchy rented a U-Haul to bring them up. And now my kids get to name these goats. We're going to have a big discussion over dinner because they're very much involved. They feed with me now. Even my son, he can help me feed. It's amazing. He does listen to me now when I say, please back off from the horses while they eat. There are hard and fast rules when it comes to being around animals. They're all in their pens, but the paddocks, but it's tricky. And my daughter, she's just so essential. If she wants to come out and feed, it's not one of those, it's going to take 45 minutes longer now because my kid wants to help me. It's more, oh my God, she's going to shave off 10 minutes because she's going to be able to go feed the goats herself. And that is amazing. And they're learning how to just be with animals, which is, again, like the most meditative place to be around here. But besides just sitting in the woods by yourself, which she loves going to the woods because she has fairy houses, and being in nature is just really clean, and it inspires magic and it inspires her imagination, and she becomes one with nature, and it's not even a thought. It's just subconscious as much as it is conscious, and feels just really safe. And I think they're going to see a lot of death. And that's been really hard for me. So I can imagine it's harder for them because they don't really understand the concept the way I do. But it is really hard, but that's unfortunately life. And I think it's going to teach them a lot about living.
I know for me, pregnancy, the intimacy of motherhood, the magic of watching my kids unfold who they are, that to me is the closest that I ever feel to the natural world. I'm curious how motherhood has been that opportunity to reflect on your role in the ecosystem through your children and as they grow too.
Part of it is I do consider what the world will be like when they're older, and every choice I make really does affect them in terms of my footprint and being smart about the choices I make in anything, in buying what I buy and what I say and the time I spend on my phone. Everything affects them. And I think knowing that my purpose has changed in such a powerful way. I am living for myself, but I'm also living for all of us. And I'm living in a way that keeps a path for them and creates space for them. I'm really focused on the bigger picture in a lot of moments and how what I do will affect the future. I do have to be present. That's another thing about parenting. So you do have to be present with your kids and present with yourself because you'll miss out. But you also have to be like 8 steps ahead sometimes too. And it's
the both and.
Yeah. And they both can happen at the same time. They really can. I don't know how, but they can. Even though I'm the parent, I need to be the disciplinarian, but I also do want to be their friend. And I don't know, it's weird being a mother and watching out for them and helping them build tools to get through life because it's hard and weird, and tools to feel like they're enough. And at the same time, teaching myself that I'm enough. I also have to like be a mother and give them their space to grow to. I don't know. What's motherhood? What is it?
I think it is that portal to asking the deeper questions of how we connect to each other, how we belong to each other. What is selflessness? What is interconnection? I was reading a really interesting article this week about how women contain so many different cells from their children within their bodies, right? And so it has just been like, I've said the word meditation a couple of times, but it's like art and poetry and this invitation to reimagine ourselves through our kids.
We do learn so much about ourselves through parenthood. It's like a bigger lesson than really anything else for sure on this earth.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
You also talked about your commitment to sustainability and while being present for your kids today, imagining the world that you're creating for them. Your interest in that has also aligned with a new business that you are working on with some of your best friends called Make It Cute, which has sustainability and childhood kind of interwoven. Tell us the story about why you and your two best friends started this company.
You have kids, you become a different type of consumer. There's just so much waste in general.
almost by design, right? In motherhood, it feels like they want you to have all this stuff.
Yeah. And they tell you need it all and you buy it all because you think, okay, I could use the help, right? But I've learned so much about recycling through this Make It Cute business, which is interesting. And it's very frustrating because no one really knows, like not enough people know how to recycle and how to recycle in each state changes. My girlfriends, Anna and Maureen and I, we met when we were five in kindergarten, and it was during the pandemic, and my best friend Anna was making these beautiful, really gorgeous looking playhouses out of these refrigerator boxes that she had, or she cut them both in half and she made two gorgeous playhouses. Ornate. We were all thinking, these are amazing. Let's make them. Let's do something together. We wanted to go into business somehow, but you know how you have these ideas and then they never come to fruition because your parents, you got kids, it's the pandemic, you have a career, it all comes into play. And we fought those walls. We kept pushing them down, meeting people, talking to people, hiring people, designing ourselves, becoming engineers ourselves. The amount of paper tape and cardboard miniature houses I've made and the videos I made of them, it's been a long couple of years. And we were able to step by step create exactly what we imagined, which is not easy. And I'm still shocked that we went into business and that we have a business. But at the same time, we just have so much to do and we have so many ideas. And now that we have this foundational product, the home, the playhouse, it feels like a lot of the other stuff is going to come a lot easier, hopefully. But business is business. It's hard. We feel like we're selling our product to us. That's how you find it, right? There was a hole in the marketplace. We built it. And it makes me feel like we can do it, as hard as it is. It's really hard.
And that's the thing. And that's what also I love about entrepreneurship is there's almost a divine characteristic, right? You have this just an idea. And then you're like, maybe we could do it. And then fast forward, tons of hard work, money, blood, sweat, tears, doubts, years, struggle. And it's like having, it's like a baby. It's a creation that you're so proud of and you want people to love so much. And not everyone will always love it or get it. And nobody will know what you went through to get to that point.
I feel like it's important to say that it's a lot harder to get stuff done when you're a woman still, for so many reasons. And I will tell you how many men from all different industries or careers have spoken to us in a way where there was a lot of doubt. Those seeds of doubt did not just wash off our backs. They were planted. And so we had a lot of people who I felt like placated in a lot of ways in the beginning. And just a lot of people who know how hard it is to create a business. And I feel I wouldn't have spoken to their male counterparts the same way. And so I found that just to be, especially because we weren't in the toy industry. We weren't in business. Maureen is a physician's assistant. She worked in breast health until we started our company. She was finally able to quit. She's like, I can't do this. It's so emotionally taxing. And I spent all my free time meeting people. It was all during Zoom, the pandemic Zoomville. And it was just tricky. It's weird to try to talk to somebody as an equal. It was very interesting. We met a lot of women, a lot of mothers, and a lot of female entrepreneurs and felt like we were totally on the right path and when we stuck together. And it's sad because that still exists and it probably always will in some places.
I think their blind spot becomes your opportunity because you found the white space, right? Beautiful, playful, sustainable, fully recyclable. That didn't exist before. And you and your friends made it with Make It Cute. They can come by you in the store when it's fully out. But if everyone could see the vision that you had, they would have started it. But I think sometimes it just, the right people aren't at the table hearing the pitches. And you just have to go on the data, yes, but also your intuition about where the opportunity is.
Yeah. And there's so much passion that I don't find in a lot of businesses. It's just about the end game. And that's why I really love collaborating with businesses that are female run and built from a very solid need or idea. And there's so many of them out there. And it's really nice to link arms.
Tell us what the vision is for Make It Cute. You have this incredibly beautiful, thoughtful, playful first line of products. But what happens from here?
We will always have that. And we have new designs, new templates for those, for that actual engineer, that design, because we have an amazing illustrator. And we already have another house that we're going to start printing, but maybe in the summer we'll do that. But I do have the most incredible Halloween Victoria mansion. Anyway, it's like my favorite one. It's tricky, but we've had a lot of these ideas already, and we just had to launch the house. We just had to keep with the one thing to see how stable it was and to see what people thought and to get feedback, quality control. It's been a year. I'll tell you, it's been a rough, stressful, launching a business kind of year. It's scary. It's been great, though, to be honest. I haven't spent this much time with my girlfriends since we were college age. So it's been great. It's been really great.
Such a cool idea. The houses are adorable. And so thank you for creating just a fun, beautiful product that real moms are going to want to have in their homes. Oh, and even better, and you can fold it away.
Oh yeah, no, there's just no way we could do that without it. I have a bunch of them under one couch, just to say. That's a big selling point too.
As a mom, you stepped into the juvenile product manufacturing space. You have many other projects, including Thelma and Louise coming up. Many other things I'm sure I don't even know about on your radar. I'm curious how being a mom has reshaped your priorities professionally and how you think about what you want to spend your time on.
Geographically, it will not go anywhere or shoot anything outside of New York. No, that's not true. But it feels true. I don't leave for long. And if I'm going to go overseas for anything, it's going to be because my best friend or my family friend is making a movie and needs me, which is going to happen probably this year. And I will bring the family. There are just rules. There's just hard and fast rules. My life is in pieces. And they all need to fit together somehow. And it's a lot of negotiating schedules. It's a lot of compromises. I can't just do anything I want to do. I just want to do good work. We just had a strike. I was fine just being home. I am very lucky to be able to say that, but I'm really happy at home. Not to say that I don't love my job as an actor, but I worked really hard the year before. And for whatever reason, I felt like home was where I needed to be. And I got to do that. I'm about to start shooting a new television show in the city, close to the family. I just make it work for myself because my kids, I need to see them. I need to be with them. I need them to know that I love to work, but that I also just love to be home as well. I need them to see me happy and need them to see me fulfilled and satisfied and actively engaging in the version of me that's an artist. And then I integrate them, everything. Everything's integrated. My schedule's pretty packed, but I've already decided how my life is going to look. I also don't make any compromises with work. I'm committed to my job and I want to do great work. And then I'm passionate about what it is, but they also know that I'm a mother first. I can be both, but really my priority is making sure that my kids feel safe in the world.
I know you mentioned all of this kind of being integrated in your life. And as I was thinking about our conversation coming up, I'm not a famous actress, but I was in my high school musical, so I have a little bit of an idea of what it was like.
What was it?
Carousel.
Oh, wow.
And a couple other plays, but my acting career totally ended there. I remember the act of trying to generate empathy and imagination for what other people go through as you're on stage, as you're playing these roles. And I was thinking about this because I know for me as a mom, I can have empathy for people and situations that I would have been cold to before. And now my heart breaks reading the news or just seeing heartbreak up close in my day-to-day life, because it feels like that person is someone's baby in a way that just feels so real to me. I share all of that to ask if your experience of motherhood, the tenderness, the vulnerability, the empathy, the part of you that's not you that's walking around in the world, how has that experience reshaped you, if at all, as an actor?
Oh, it's just so much richer. My world is in some ways narrowed. My imagination has narrowed and gotten almost more vivid in the focus that I have. And so I have some blind spots in scenes where I used to be able to cry at the drop of a hat. I can't because it's actually too closed. I'm more sensitive to everything. I could cry at happy things or sick animals, sick kids, like that stuff that really moves the world. I could become very emotional very quickly when it comes to my own heartbreak or fear. So I don't have to go as deep in to generate something as my character. But with the stuff that's more disconnected to my present life, it's hard to do it on cue. It just it has to be more natural. And so I find it much harder to get emotional in certain ways now that I'm a mother, because I am so protective of myself because I'm so vulnerable. I am the most vulnerable I will ever be because I have these people who I would die for. So if I do have to cry, for instance, like here's a little tidbit. I'm going to probably watch a video on Instagram of a dog who doesn't have a home and maybe only three legs or like mange or not. Or maybe it'll hit me so deeply that I actually can't. Maybe it'll just be too painful. I just feel things so much heavier that I'm like, I think that the survival mechanism inside of me is, no, don't go there. It will literally, you won't be able to come back from it.
You're describing it, and I have a feeling of it, of there is such strength in motherhood, otherworldly strength. You would die for your children, as we all would. But also there is the most tenderness inside of you that's ever been. And somehow both of those things coexist in this body, this being as mothers. And then when you add that to the work that you do and access the imagination and storytelling and imagining what other people are feeling like.
Oh my, you know what it is? I've separated my own, like I've created walls and boundaries around what is sacred to me. And so now I'm acting more than I ever have. Before I was just like, it was more me and my open empathic, like whatever that is that makes me an actor, makes me want to continue doing this. It's just, I see people, I want to imagine what it's like in their shoes and I do it, but it maybe was a little easier before. Now it feels like a little bit harder because I'm having to really put myself aside to protect what is sacred and protect my own emotional life and connections that I have to my real life and really act these things. And it's incredible because you might not recognize it as an audience, but it certainly feels a lot harder, not less fun, but just hard, just a different type of challenge. And that's okay because I much prefer my life as it is now than starting again and being a 22-year-old actor trying to turn myself off, which I couldn't do. I just couldn't. I was just an open vessel. And you need to have some of that to be an actor no matter what. Children or no children, if you're 80 or 10, but you also need to be able to protect yourself.
So at Motherly, we believe that motherhood brings out our superpowers. We just talked about some of them, of the way that we transform. What do you see as your superpower?
When I'm listening, I think I really listen. It feels like a superpower. I make room for people. I'm working on this, but in some ways I made so much room for people that I would take myself. I would leave no space for myself. And that's something I've really worked hard to remedy. But I still make a lot of room for people in a way that serves them and me. I always create a space or leave a space where I try to on my best days, God knows, for everybody to be able to hold themselves as equals. And I think that's a superpower. And that's what I think makes me feel like a good mom. And I hope I can continue to do that without it costing me something. And also I can purr like a cat.
Does that come in handy on the farm?
Not at all. Isn't that funny? Not at all. But some people really seem to think it's cool. Yeah.
Oh, can you purr?
So I never have to stop. I can breathe in purr and breathe out purr.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Which is very, people seem to think it's different. People seem to think it's a like
party trick, superpower.
It's a skill. Yeah.
That's a first on this podcast.
Good. I want to leave an impression.
You did. Amanda Seyfried, thank you so much for all your wisdom, the purring, it all. Thanks for joining us on the Motherly Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for asking good questions and hearing me talk and for this podcast.
Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you so much, Amanda. And thank you for listening to this podcast. We'll be back next week with another great guest. You don't want to miss it. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in. We will be back next week with another great guest. You don't want to miss it. The Motherly Podcast is executive produced by Jennifer Bassett. Our senior producer is Marissa Bramwell. Editing is by Joel Edinburg. Our music is from the Blue Dot Sessions. I'm your host, Liz Tennedy. Thank you so much for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.